For the past 52 weeks, you and I have been led Sunday by Sunday through the entire gospel according to Matthew. We have been led through the words and the deeds of Jesus. And today we come to the final day of the year of Matthew. Beginning next Sunday, we begin the year of Mark. And so what the church puts before us today is the picture of the final judgment. And really the picture of the litmus test that Jesus lays out for what it is to be a disciple of his. Today is also the feast of Christ the King. This is a rather new feast in the life of the church. It began to be celebrated only in the late 1920s. It's important when one considers the feast of Christ the King to consider what was going on in the world at the time the feast was first offered to the church. You and I in the United States often think of two great wars that took place in the first half of the 20th century. We name them the First World War and the Second World War. But for Europeans, that doesn't make any sense. For Europeans, there was just one war, and that war lasted for the first half of the 20th century. The 1920s saw a bit of a reprieve, in the midst of that war. But as that war ended, the first part of the war, and the nations of Europe were reconfigured, and boundaries were redrawn, so much of that was done whimsically, and thus established, if you will, the conditions, or some of the conditions, that would prevail in the refiring of that war. The late 20s also saw economic crises, not only in Europe, but throughout the world. And it was in the face of all of that, that in the mid-1920s, Pope Pius XI established the feast of Christ the King. And as he looked at the world that he knew and the challenges that were there, and particularly the difficulties, he wrote in part the following: "The seeds of discord are sown far and wide. Those bitter enmities and rivalries between nations still persist and hinder so much the cause of peace. The insatiable greed, which is so often hidden under the pretense of public spirit and patriotism, gives rise to so many private quarrels, and a blind and immoderate selfishness leads people to seek only their own comfort and advantage, and to measure everything by their success." When people face crises, very often the most natural thing in the world is we turn in upon ourselves. We become terribly preoccupied with what is going on in our lives and what is impinging upon our lives. In the face of crisis, it's increasingly difficult for men and women to look outward, to look beyond themselves. That's just human nature. And it is precisely this feast which is the invitation to look beyond, to look beyond oneself. There's a very homey image that is present in the gospel that perhaps most of us miss. Jesus is, as he comes in glory, is separating people into two groups. We're told as a shepherd would separate sheep from goats. Sheep are very careful creatures. Sheep are simple creatures. Sheep are respectful creatures. When you live in a land where there is little grazing ground, you move the sheep from place to place so that the grazing land is not all depleted. But goats, on the other hand, goats will not only graze, but goats will destroy the grazing land. Goats are greedy. Goats are selfish. Goats will not be satisfied to graze and to move on. They will tear up the land. So from the very beginning of the parable, it is very clear what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about those who would be respectful and those who would be selfish. And he says in the end of St. Matthew's Gospel that the litmus test for being a disciple of mine is to be outward reaching, to step beyond oneself, to see the world as bigger than oneself. The challenge that Jesus provides is to say to me, all of life is not what you see and what you want. All of life is not your experience. All of life is bigger. And what Jesus invites his disciples to do is to step out of themselves and to embrace their neighbor, and especially to embrace the weakest, the most unrepresented, the voiceless, the faceless, and the powerless. That will be the test. That will be the test of the disciple. Now, in the late 1920s, it was the challenge that was offered to believers to, in the face of tremendous obstacles in Europe especially, to reach beyond themselves, to see the world through the eyes of God, to embrace the truth that God has come among us in human life, and that God's love for each of us is made manifest in Jesus Christ. And that you and I are called to reflect that love of God in the service of our neighbor. That was the challenge. Well, I would suggest that that challenge that was so appropriate in the late 1920s is no less appropriate as you and I walk more deeply in the 21st century. For we too face similar kinds of challenges. And for us as well, the temptation is to be inward turning. And for us, for each of us, the challenge is to recognize the face of God in the human nature of Jesus Christ, to recognize God's love for us is mediated, is proclaimed, is revealed in Jesus Christ, and that each and every one of us, individually and communally, are called to reflect that gift of God's love in the service of our neighbor. And especially in the service of the weakest and those who are most in need. As we pray today, as we bring ourselves to the table of the Lord, as we celebrate that Jesus is Lord of the universe, we pray that we might have a view of life that is increasingly larger than ourselves, and that out of that divine view of life, we might live as disciples of Jesus.